Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk a little about reducing soil erosion on the farm. We would also be happy to take your phone call all throughout the show. Our phone lines will be open. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag here in just a minute. Been getting lots of questions in for that. Before we do, I'll just say a couple quick things about erosion. This was a major, major issue through much of the 20th century, at least here in the United States, and really, quite frankly, around the world. But as reduced tillage has gotten a lot more popular, this has dramatically improved. Now, a lot of people look at this and they go, well, you know, our grandpas should have all been doing that. No, they couldn't do that. We didn't have good pesticides then. We didn't have good equipment then. And because of those two things, and then the other thing is we didn't have great corn hybrids or soybean varieties or anything that would germinate well and do well in, I mean, with all that residue and colder soil, more disease pressure, everything else, I mean, it would have broke them. So they couldn't do that. They didn't have a choice. And when people attack modern pesticides today, well, what you're asking for, in effect, farmers can go back to farming the way they used to and doing lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of tillage. Well, that's not a good thing for the environment when you got all this dirt that's washing downstream and all the dirt washing down the hill. It's not great long-term for the farm. So modern pesticides have dramatically changed the ability of a farmer out there to be able to even go to no-till, because when you're in no-till, you got different weeds and you've got to control the weeds with a pesticide if you don't have tillage. Because let's face it, people aren't going to go out and walk their fields anymore and pull the weeds. The next thing is, you're in no-till or reduced tillage, you are absolutely going to have more insect pressure and more disease pressure, and that is, I mean, that's a fact, and it is dramatic. So anyway, the point is, pesticides make a huge difference, as does that equipment that you're running today. I mean, just think about the planter that you're using today. It's unbelievable compared to the planters that we used to have two generations ago. Night and day difference, and now allows us to go through all that residue and do a good job placing the seed so you can end up with high yields. Oh, yeah, and then the other thing is just modern genetics today. Aren't they a lot better than they used to be? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm still going to complain about the seed price all the time. I think seed costs are too high. But, I mean, the seed is worth a lot more money than the seed we used to have, even when I was a kid on the farm. I mean, just look at the yields that we're getting anymore. And we plant into some what I would consider awful conditions. We have awful weather. Like on our farm, we haven't had rain in 3 months. We're still ending up with really, really good yields. We never would have been able to do that when I was a kid. So anyway, it's all these modern technologies that are allowing us to dramatically reduce soil erosion. So we'll talk about that throughout the show. But right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
First one comes from Jesse. We were talking about harvest loss, and Jesse said, little things do mean a lot. Just a few kernels or beans on the ground instead of in the combine is adding up, and it sure surprised me to learn how much money is getting left on the ground every year. Add that, of course, to the volunteer crops that have to be dealt with next year. It just adds up to a lot of money when you have harvest loss.
Definitely.
Absolutely right, Jesse. Yeah, it's just a reminder for everybody as you're going along harvesting, get out and check what's going on in the field, what's happening behind that combine, and see where your loss is occurring. Brad and I have made 1 foot squares out of PVC pipe that we use. They're weatherproof. You can just throw them down and see how many kernels are in that square foot. And we've got the Ag PhD Harvest Loss app, which is free. And you can use that to type in what your normal price is for grain or what your current price for grain is, how many kernels per foot you're seeing and what crop you're doing. And you can tell exactly how many dollars per acre you're leaving on the ground. It definitely will make you stop that combine and look at things if you're seeing some loss. Hey, Jesse, thanks for the comment. We appreciate that. Got one from Chet. He said, you talk about Sharpen a lot for kochia control in wheat. I'm wondering, what rate are you generally using? Is 1 ounce enough or do you need to go to two?
Two. Plain and simple. Got to run 2 ounces. It's only going to cost an extra, probably, let's call it $4 to at the most $5 an acre extra. And I know when you're in wheat country and low yields, you go, well, $5 is a lot. Look, you've got to control kochia. And that extra $4 to $5 you will spend will make an absolute difference. So just spend the money on the 2 ounces instead of the one, and you're going to be in a lot better shape. Darren, I was thinking about this a couple, 3 days ago with, you know, just the tendency for all farmers, myself included, where when we see a rate and we see a range, we go, well, it says 1 to 2 ounces. I'm just going to use the 1 ounce then. It's a lot cheaper. And quite frankly, let's be honest, for all of us out there, we go, well, could I shave that to 0.9 ounces or 0.8 or something like that? But that's where you got to look at what weed are we after, how bad is it, and what kind of weather conditions do I have? So for example, right now, if you're going out there spraying Roundup, and every night it's getting down, like for us, down to 40 degrees. Well, that Roundup isn't going to work like normal. You've got to use a higher rate to get the same performance. In the middle of the summer, if the humidity is 80%, the temperature in the daytime is 80%, and you have this great growth out there, plus you can get good spray coverage. I mean, yes, lower rates absolutely can work. So you got to put these all in relative terms here. But when I think about kochia, number one, it's a tough weed. Number two, a lot of people have lots of kochia, unfortunately. And number three, we want more residual. That's the whole reason why we step up a pre-emerge herbicide from a 1 ounce rate to a 2 ounce rate. The 1 ounce rate, quite frankly, just gives you a little burn down, maybe a week's worth of residual, maybe two at best. So if you want better burn down, a lot better residual, you go 2 ounces of Sharpen all day long in wheat. Just make sure it's done pre-emerge. You don't want to do it after the wheat's up.
We'll get right back to more of your calls and questions in our discussion on erosion coming up next.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to competitive herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Weedmaster, Patriot, and Diablo for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Talking about reducing erosion on the farm on today's Ag PhD radio program. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, I brought my seventh grade son to work with me today, and we were just actually talking about it on the way. He said in one of their classes, they were talking about erosion, and we were driving into a field of soybeans that we're harvesting today. And he said, I learned, Dad, about how important it is to leave those roots in the ground and how they really help reduce erosion. And I said, you're absolutely right. That can make a big difference. And we've got our friend Ty Fickenscher with us right now down in Nebraska. He's with LUMA. Ty, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, good. My son Lincoln was educating me on how leaving root systems intact will really help reduction of erosion, and something you certainly see in Nebraska as well.
Yeah, we have some, you know, some soil, especially out west, some highly erodible is what it's classified, and you know, try to do what we can to prevent that from running off too terribly much. So,
yeah, I look at this year being really dry, and there's parts of Nebraska this year that, wow, talk about dry. It was really dry. And what do you see differently happening in those fields? Do you see farmers making any changes, managing anything a little more different? Because you may think, well, I want to get a cover crop started. There's no way you're going to get a cover crop started on dry land, bone dry, drought stressed fields.
Yeah, and that's, you know, compared to 2019, you know, the issue we had there was we'd get 4 or 5 inch rains at a time and have some serious washing and some pretty deep ruts that were developed because of it. But yeah, you're exactly right. This year, you know, especially under pivots, it's kind of the other thing is the pivots had to run, you know, run far more often than normal. And so we've got ruts from the pivot tracks, not so much from runoff. But yeah, with the, you know, we just put some cover crop in the other day. And just like I said, it's under a pivot, so we're going to be able to water that up. But on the non-irrigated, you know, there's still a slight amount of moisture, but you know, what we found is typically if we use something like rye, you know, it'll sit out there for quite a while before it sprouts without moisture. And once we get that moisture, it'll really take off and provide some good stability to that soil.
Yeah, it's really important. I know we typically are on the dry side. The last couple of years, we've been on the wet side, but now we're back to being on the dry side, which is a little more normal where we're at here in the West. But whether you're dry or whether you're wet, you still got to be smart and you still got to play the odds and think about, you know, on normal years, this is what happens. And it could be wind erosion, could be rain erosion. There's a lot of different ways that soil can move.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as you look at the tillage practices, I mean, that's one thing we really look at. And, you know, obviously we're out there with strip till. We're going to be still doing some tillage, but we're not tilling the entire profile. So we're not going to see as much erosion with that. But, you know, no-till situations, leaving that residue on the surface, you know, keeping that soil held down as much as we can is really critical to keeping a good profile.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to think about when we're out there this fall. And I know one of the things in our area has been fire risk. It's been just so dry this year. And I've seen on social media a number of fields that have burned up and lost all of their residue on top of the ground, or worse yet, some areas they lost the crop too because it spread into a field that hadn't been harvested yet. That's kind of a tough situation to be in. Have you run into any of that in Nebraska in your area?
Well, we've had some combines in the area that have burned up pretty bad. I'm only aware of one instance close by where a field, it got into a field, but it didn't get very far. But, you know, we get these hot, windy, dry days like we have today, and gosh, even the tiniest spark will really cause a nightmare to happen. But you know, it seems like in those instances where it does, you know, burn that residue, that unfortunately that soil, if it gets hot enough, it kind of glazes over and it'll hold through the winter. But you know, obviously not ideal. We don't want to be doing that too much at all. So,
No, there's certainly a lot of challenges with this harvest season. And when we talk about reducing erosion, everything we're doing here at Harvest and how we're managing that residue certainly puts our next crop in a chance either to succeed or to struggle. So hopefully today's discussion will lead us on the path to success for next year's crop. Again, talking with Ty Fickenscher down in Nebraska. Ty, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here the rest of Harvest.
All right, thank you.
Let's head over to Indiana. Real happy to have Tony Bailey with us right now. He's with NRCS, the state conservation agronomist there. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Sure, got you. Thanks, Darren.
You know, I was saying earlier in the show, my seventh grader was educating me on just leaving that root mass intact really helps reduce erosion, and I was showing him some things we're doing out in the field. What are you seeing for practices across the state of Indiana? Clearly, erosion is down significantly versus a generation ago with some of the equipment that we've got. Are you seeing a lot of farmers doing cover crops? What kind of strategies are they using to stop erosion?
Well, appreciate that our youth are being educated and that they're trying to help us along as well. you know, here in Indiana, we've been real fortunate the last 20 or so years to start making some of those transitions to no-till, whether it's also strip-till, and then also everything we can with mulch-till, reduced-till, conservation tillage. The last few years, we've seen the last 5 or so years, I've really seen an increase of interest in cover crops as well. We really think that adding those cover crops to any cropping system helps improve the biology of the soil. So when we take that residue and leave it there on the surface, we've improved that biology. That biology can help to process that residue. And I think that's something that we missed out on in the late 80s, early 90s. We had people switch over to no-till and maybe gave up on that. And I think if we'd have encouraged them to possibly try cover crops ahead of time, we would have gotten that soil ready and that biology ready to take care of that residue. So we don't have as much of the cold issues that we do in the spring at planting time, cold soil temperature issues.
You know, that there are always questions that growers have as they make changes in these processes happening on the farm. And I know just growing up on a farm where my great grandpa farmed, my grandpa farmed, my dad farmed, and a lot of things is, and my brother and I got started were, well, this is how we do things. And those were tough to get them to change. But fortunately, our dad and our grandpa were guys that were always looking at, well, what's something we could do to improve things? Do you find it a struggle to get guys to try some new practices?
Yeah, it always is. And like you said, it's what they've done. It's really tough to make that change. It's what the dad did. Sometimes we're working with people, it's kind of tough to figure out who's the decision maker as well. You know, sometimes you can be talking to the son and then they turn around and say, well, let me go talk to dad about that. And then along with that, you know, trying to make any of those transitions with these cropping systems and how do we help people, how do we help the farmers to make even little tweaks within those? You know, I think I heard a little bit on the previous talk about trying to reduce the amount of tillage, how that's happening, and that's hard to do. But I think really looking at what's the purpose of the tillage that's happening. You know, hopefully there is some reason for it rather than just have some spare time or, you know, here this fall. I have a concern that with it being as dry as it is, that there's going to be a lot of potential for some recreational tillage. Don't get me wrong, it's fun to drive tractor. But,
well, it is, but we're ahead of schedule, so you're right. We got a lot of idle time here.
Well, it is. It is. There's going to be some idle time there. And I'll admit, I haven't driven a tractor in a long time, but when I did, I will admit, it is a lot of fun. But I think it's one of those things to try and make those little transitions with all of our tillage passes. How do we reduce the tillage pass? How do we make, how do we drive slower? That's really counterintuitive. You know, if we're driving slower, we're burying less residue. Can we do it shallower? Can we be less aggressive, less intense with our tillage passes? Can we set the equipment a little bit differently so we're not doing as much tillage? I think about that, trying to make those shifts every opportunity possible, whether it's this fall, next spring, making those incremental shifts. You know, our goal is, even though the soil is right now, is not to end up with seedbed ready soil this fall. You know, if that happens, we're going to have to come back and do some additional tillage next spring prior to planting. So
yeah,
I think that's one of our goals. We're going to keep. Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of time before next spring. And I know, you know, for us, we do some strip tillage too. And it's tough when you know there's going to be residue moving around in the field yet too, to think, well, I'm going to have everything done just perfect. In all cases, it just doesn't happen. Hey, we're talking with Tony Bailey with NRCS in Indiana. Tony, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, talking about reducing erosion. This is a very important topic. It's something really our whole life. For Brian and me growing up on the farm back in the 80s and 1990s, there were a lot of changes happening, a lot of reductions happening in tillage. The equipment that we got to use was a lot more advanced than what had been out there. And I remember walking out with my grandpa. He was in his 90s, and we were walking from one field that was up the hill and then across the road and down the hill to the next field. And these are fields that he had farmed in his farming career. And I remember seeing a tear in my grandpa's eyes. And I thought, oh, no, I pushed my 90-year-old grandpa too far. I said, oh, man, grandpa, I'm sorry making you walk all this. I could have got a four-wheeler or something here and driven you down here. He goes, I'm not worried about the walking. He said, that's no problem. He goes, I'm just feeling really terrible at the erosion that was caused by me doing all that heavy tillage on these hills over the years. And we just talked through. He's like, man, if I just would have had some of the equipment you guys had now, I wouldn't have had to do that. And I think it's important that a lot of times when we try to do things the same way our predecessor has done them, and we say, well, this is how Dad did it, or this is how Grandpa did it, we just take a look at, well, Grandpa did the best he could with what he had. If he had access to some of the things we had now, he'd do a lot of things differently. We've got Deanne Presley on with us right now with Kansas State University. Deanne, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You know, do you hear stories like that about, wow, if I just had that kind of equipment, I wouldn't have had to do it the way I did it?
Definitely, yes. I hear a lot of stories about people and the amount of time that they spent doing tillage. In fact, I spent time doing tillage disking back when I was a kid in Iowa. So, yeah, a lot of things have changed over the years.
Well,
now.
I think that was a little bit to keep kids busy, wasn't it? I mean, don't you think that your folks were thinking the same thing as mine? Boy, what could I do to keep them occupied for a few hours here?
Yes. And I guess fuel was cheaper than too.
Must have been. Yeah. So, all right. So you're in Kansas, and certainly there's a lot that changes going across that state in terms of rainfall and farming practices. What are some of the things that you're seeing happen in the state of Kansas, the efforts that farmers and others are making to reduce erosion?
Well, we are over 10 million acres of no-till in our state now. So that's a pretty high fraction. And in places where, in some of the irrigated areas, strip till is pretty common too, you know, the heavy residue from lots of irrigated corn yields. So those two things have increased a lot. And cover crops, I think our percentage of cover crop use is around 5% in the 2017 census, and I suspect that's grown now since. So, you know, those practices are changing a lot. And then I know, you know, you mentioned the tools that have changed. Well, clearly herbicides and the herbicide, you know, platforms that exist now have changed so much over time, too. So that gives a lot more options than people used to have, I think.
Yeah, that's for sure. You're right about that because, well, you know, that's one of the things that my grandpa had commented on, too. He's like, that was really my only weed control other than me and the kids walking the fields and pulling things, which was okay for small amounts of weeds, but not for the big things. So you're right. Those herbicide platforms have really changed things.
Yeah. And then one of the things I'm actually doing today is I'm a soil scientist, and I measure wind erosion. And so I've got wind erodibility samples that I took in spring, and I'm finally getting them run now. I wasn't able to get to my lab as much over the summer as normal. And so I like to measure that, you know, so the effects of residue, so residue removal, like baling corn stalks, and the effect that that has on just the way, what that soil surface looks like in the spring after you come out of winter, and how much more the particles are smaller, and because they've frozen and thawed many, many more times than they would have if they were covered by a blanket of residue. And then the amount of nutrients that are lost in that wind erodible fraction is pretty impressive. Not in a good way either. I shouldn't say it that way. It's pretty sad how many nutrients can be lost in that erodible fraction.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about how many nutrients are in the very top of our soil, and those fine particles, if we don't protect them, carry a lot more away than just dirt. And I see clouds sometimes as you get into different areas where there's heavy tillage going on, and you see black snow drifts and these kinds of things. It's really sad to see as much move.
Some people are calling that snert, snow plus dirt, snert. You know, and have you ever had that thought about, like, I wonder about planting gardens in ditches? You know, that might actually be a good place. I bet there's a lot of good stuff in ditches, you know, in the Midwest.
Yeah, there sure could be. And, you know, when you think about this, you mentioned just leaving residue on top and how much that helps. And certainly if you've got a growing crop out there, that helps even more. It's a challenge, though. And you mentioned 5% of Kansas using cover crops right now. What is the limitation on that? Why are more growers not doing it? It seems like you've got a longer growing season there, but I know that's certainly not the same everywhere in Kansas. It's quite a diverse state.
Yeah, so, you know, we do have the opportunity to double crop. So after wheat, we'll double crop soybeans or sorghum or sunflowers. So I think, you know, we can be more intense with our actual crop rotation. So that's good, too. That's a growing living crop that produces a revenue. I think cover crop usage is going up as people are sort of reintroducing livestock back into the situation because they can monetize that pretty easy. So I think the limitation for people that are not reintroducing livestock is just it's an extra cost, and who's got extra money right now? So that's where your conservation programs from the federal government come in pretty handy, the EQIP and the CSP and things like that, for some ability to try things out, at least get some incentives for, you know, the first few years to ease that burden of the cost.
Now, as a soil scientist, Deanne, you say you're measuring wind erosion right now. Certainly a lot of growers, their first thought is, well, I'm worried about water washing things away, and they kind of forget about that wind component. Do you have any numbers in terms of where most of the erosion is happening? Is there a 50-50 split between wind and rain erosion, or is it heavier to one or the other?
It just depends on where you are. So the, you know, for my state, probably easily the western half to western two-thirds, wind erosion is a bigger factor. And for the eastern third, water erosion is a bigger factor. But, you know, I'm in Manhattan today, and Manhattan sometimes we'll even see soil blowing in April, you know, from worked fields. So wind erosion, it can really happen anywhere, any day. But water erosion is, yes, equally a problem. And residues answer for both, honestly, having some amount of residue. You know, I know people do use corn stalks for certain purposes, and that's important. I understand that. But maybe just not taking it off of the same fields every year, spreading that out, rotating it around, you know, I think it's a good plan.
We've found cutting our stalks just a little higher, too. A lot of times we'll leave 18 inches of stalk out there, and it seems like that holds more leaves and other residue in that row a little bit better heading into the winter and into next spring. Do you notice a difference with the height that the stalks are cut at?
You know, there's other people doing some work on that, and yes, that is a really good way because it can lift the wind profile up away from the soil surface just a little farther too. So, which is good, right? So keeping the wind away from the surface stops those processes of wind erosion from happening, but also can help with catching snow, can maybe help reduce drying out a little bit. So I think that's a very smart plan too, is keeping stalks higher.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that we're doing in the farm each year, and we just have to be really purposeful with every pass that we make out in that field and every decision that we're making to try to reduce erosion and help the long-term life of our soils in the fields. We're talking with Deanne Presley with Kansas State University. Deanne, thank you so much. It was great talking to you today.
Yes, thank you.
Talking about reducing erosion on our show, also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We got one from Melissa who said, I heard you guys talking about gypsum the other day. It's just hard to find where I'm at. Do you see different fertility and soil amendment products available in some areas, not in other areas? Absolutely, that's true. There's certainly areas where you'd have to haul gypsum quite a ways, but there are other calcium sources too, if that's what you need, and certainly other sulfur sources. So yeah, in some cases you may end up using something different than gypsum, but you never know. You have to check. There's a lot of manufacturing type processes where gypsum ends up being a byproduct. Hey, thanks, Melissa, for the feedback, and we'll be right back after this.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltrumUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Talking about reducing erosion on the farm on today's Ag PhD radio show. Really important show. And one of the things that Deanne Presley brought up with Kansas State University, she said their acres of no-till are going up in Kansas. And got an email here from a no-tiller. This is from Angela. She said, I think you guys are looking for an excuse to just do conventional tillage out there. You're not farming regeneratively. We were talking about the pros and cons of no-till, and that's what she's referring to. Angela, you know, I'd say this. We want to look at the pros and cons of everything. There's virtually nothing out there that is going to be 100% positive, even rainfall. You can
there
say,
is
well,
nothing
we need rain, we
positive.
Need sun, we need heat. Not always. You need a break from that stuff, too, and you need a balance. And that's why we were just talking about both ends. We think no-till is a great practice, and in many cases, in many areas, growers can make that work very well. But sometimes you may need to do something else, and we're just open to what would be best for the land.
Yeah, our two biggest challenges when we were no-till for about 10 years and about half the farm was, number one, soil's too cold in spring, and we didn't get good early vigor out of our crops, and that really hurt our yield. And the other thing was the nutrient stratification we ended up with. So after 10 years of doing that, almost all our fertility was in the top 2 inches, and that doesn't work. You got to get fertility deeper. Now, granted, could we have done something with, let's just say, a narrow coulter and put fertilizer down? Yes, we could have. We didn't. And we just switched over to strip till. I like strip till just because it kind of solved our two issues we had in no till. We do now have a warm strip to plant in, and quite frankly, a better seed bed. And then number two is we've got fertility down deeper. We put a lot of fertility down 8 to 10 inches deep. That is great. It's right where it needs to be. It's right in the heart of the root zone. So I love those things. And no till certainly can work. But yeah, when you talk about farming regeneratively, you know, it's just like these people talk about sustainability. Well, you know what's not sustainable? Going broke. That's, you know, I mean, if you're going to farm at the end of the year, I mean, well, not necessarily every year, but over a period of time, you've got to make money somehow, some way. And if whatever you're doing isn't working, then you got to change something. I mean, that's free market economy. That's just the way that it works. So, I mean, ultimately, every farmer would love to do the best practices that are going to help the farm long term. But we talk about this quite often. Unfortunately, we don't farm in a perfect world. Some years, like the last 2 years, they were the wettest years in history in our region, and we had almost double normal rainfall both years. Well, guess what? You're going to leave a few tracks out there and things like that where they're not going to fix themselves. I mean, I'd love it if they did, and all of a sudden these magical animals showed up and repaired all our ruts that we have out in the field. It doesn't work that way. So you got to do some tillage sometimes. It's just the way it goes.
I like your idea about the animal spray. Maybe we could train some animals that like digging in the soil to dig out those ruts. That would be
yep.
That'd be okay by me.
Right. Let's fence them off and, you know, all these little areas. Yeah, come on.
All right. Get a soil testing question here. This comes from Brad. He said, all right, I liked your article that you guys wrote about base saturation K. My soil tests that I've got right in front of me are for this farm since 1996. It's gotten confinement hog manure 16 times in the last 24 years and chicken litter twice. The test calls 160 to 200 parts per million optimum, 200 to 240 parts per million high, and above that, very high. Even the areas testing over 250 parts per million still don't average much over 2% base saturation.
Yep.
Those figures do not seem to be highly correlated. Is organic matter the other main factor in the base saturation? So on a 4% organic matter soil, I'd need a K level of 250 to 2.5%.
It's cation exchange capacity. And keep in mind, cation exchange capacity is the type of clay you have in your soil, the amount of clay, and the amount of organic matter. But yes, I mean, this is one of the big issues that we have with a lot of soils labs, universities, I mean, where people are just simply looking at parts per million, and it might be right in certain soils, and then it's wrong in other soils. You've got to look at what's your ratio of potassium to magnesium and calcium. And if you don't believe me, do plant tissue analysis at least once a week, all growing season long, and you will see that you just aren't getting enough potassium into the plant, especially when things turn out a little bit on the dry side, which they often do for us. You've got to have potassium in ratio. We talk about balance of nutrients in the soil all the time. I say this often as well. We talk about human health here too. What we talk about in soils, very similar to human health. You want a good balance of nutrients in your body. You want to have a balanced diet. I mean, they never say, well, you need certain parts per million of this and parts per million of that for human health, right? They talk about what? It's all balance. It's the same thing with soils. I mean, to say a parts per million number, that's just flat out wrong, and it's going to cause a lot of people issues because every soil is a little different. If you have a 40 CEC versus a 4 CEC, you sure as heck don't want to have the same level of parts per million of K out there. It's not going to work in one or the other.
Yeah, we get a lot of questions like this right now. We get another one here that's kind of similar. This is from Brandon. He said, I get a question about manure, fertility, and corn ground. I've got 16 tons per acre of dry manure that I'm going to be putting on this fall and working it in. Here's my analysis. It is 4, 4, 7, 0.9 per ton for the first 0.9 year
availability. 0.9 sulfur or what?
Sulfur. Okay. So multiply that times 16 tons, you got 64, 102, and 16 roughly. So good deal of fertility. Said field averages.
Whoa. Yes, it's a good deal of fertility, but yep. Is that enough?
No, it's not enough for a whole crop. But that's his question here.
Yeah, maybe. Go ahead.
So he said, my field average is 4.7% organic matter. So I'm going to get some free mineralization from that.
Yes.
And my cation exchange capacity is 23. I'm in central Minnesota. And I'm shooting for 180 bushel corn on this ground. It's really a field that needs some drainage improvements, but it's rented, and that's another story. So do I really only need to add another 50 pounds of actual N? Also, if I just need 50 pounds of N, should I be putting it down in the spring pre-plant or wait to top dress it later on? Okay, so we're putting on, by my figures, 64 pounds of nitrogen with that dry manure, and we're shooting for 180 bushel corn. And if we've got 4.7% organic matter, we'll maybe get 20 pounds out of each 1% there, but it's going to come later in the season.
Probably.
It's coming later in the season.
Yep.
So you've got, 100 pounds there roughly. So you got 160 pounds for 180 bushel corn. It's not quite enough.
Well, yeah, but here's what you're neglecting to say. That manure that you're putting out, that dry manure, is very high in carbon. Okay, that's just like if you had corn on corn. What happens when you try to raise corn on corn the first time? let's say you've been corn beans. Now you're going to go, let's throw one more year of corn out there. What happens with your nitrogen requirement? You need an extra 50 pounds, if not even 100 pounds. Why? Because of the high carbon residue. That's in effect what you've got with that dry manure that you're throwing out there. So the way we always looked at it is, yeah, I realize it says it's 447.09, but your 4 pounds of nitrogen for each ton, we usually figured half at best for year one. Now, it'll come available at some point. Problem is, we don't know if it's going to come available halfway through year one, at the very end of year one, at the beginning of year two, halfway through year two. We don't know. There's too much uncertainty there. So quite frankly, if it's me, I'd count on 30 pounds there is all. And I'd say out of your organic matter, yeah, I'd feel real comfortable with 90 to 120 pounds is going to come out of your organic matter. So on the low side, let's say 90. So I got 30 and 90. I really have 120 for 180 bushel corn. Okay, and you got to get up near 200 pounds. So to say 50 pounds, no way. I'd say at least 80 pounds. That would be me. Now, here's the next thing.
How much carryover is there from this year?
Yep. How much carryover is there from this year and how much will be there for next year? We're back to kind of normal levels, what I'm seeing in our soil tests. We usually have 30 to 50 pounds left. The last 2 years, we've had 10 because of all the rain. 10. So we had to put on more nitrogen. This year, you might not. So you might have some carryover. That helps. The other thing is you're going to have high yield spots out in your field. You're talking 180 average. For all your areas that are 220, you better put a little more nitrogen on there. Well, we'll answer more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag right after this.
A history of success means proven performance. But let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag now, taking your calls and agronomic questions. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Graham and Lincoln there to answer them, which we'll see if they're still having fun. My son and my nephew in the studio today, too. Also, you can email us radio at agphd if you don't think those guys are reliable enough. I get an email here from Georgie, who's in Bulgaria, and he said, just listening to your radio show and finding a lot of useful information. Thanks, Georgie. Appreciate that. He said, I got a couple questions for you. First one is a wheat question, and here we go, Brian. Georgie says, can we apply just one shot of herbicide post-emerge and combine it with foliar fertilizer? We really like pyroxasulfa.
Well, wait, can you combine one? Can you do one shot and that's your entire weed control program? Is that what you're trying to ask?
That's part of it. And can you put it with foliar fertilizer?
Well, you can do anything you want. Is it going to be great? No. You always want to put a pre down. I don't care what crop we're talking about. If you got two shots on weeds, you're going to do better. So what a lot of people end up doing is the pendulum swings both ways, they always say. And so when you get a really clean field, you start going, well, I can save money in a trip on that pre and I'll just go post. And that's all fine for a few years. And then the weeds just get worse and worse and worse. And then they go, oh my goodness, I'm losing too much yield to these stupid weeds. I'm going to do a better program. And then they start putting the pre on again. So would I ever skip the pre on our farm? Any crop? No way. Can I put foliar fertilizer with post-emerge herbicide? With many of them, you can. You just have to be careful about what you're doing with the rate. The number one thing we worry about with foliar fertilizer is burning the crop. Now, a little bit of leaf burn isn't that bad. But if you're getting a lot of leaf burn, obviously that's a major issue. So if you say, oh, I want to throw a quart of some micronutrients out there with a herbicide that doesn't burn the crop to begin with, I'm fine with that. If you say, I want to throw 10 gallons of nitrogen with my herbicide, no way, that's going to really burn that crop. What we often will tell you is if you want to put foliar fertilizer out all by itself, especially if it's something that does burn like nitrogen, you got to put at least one part water to one part fertilizer. So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things you can do out there. And also, when I talk about herbicides that burn, or even insecticides that burn. So Lorsban, for example, gives a lot of burn as an insecticide compared to one of the pyrethroids. In terms of herbicides, I think about Buctrel. Okay, anything that's got Buctrel in it, like Husky, that's going to burn a lot more than, let's say, if I go with one of the ALS herbicides or Stinger. So all depends on what you're putting out there and the rate.
All right. You said he likes Pyroxalam or Pinoxidin, and he needs boron, manganese, molybdenum, nitrogen, and zinc. And one of the things that I'd say about the nitrogen is broadcasting nitrogen over the top just adds so much leaf burn
on
wheat.
And that was my point. And that's where you got to blend it down with water if you're going to do a whole bunch. So usually you put the nitrogen out early.
Yeah, when talking extreme boron so much better.
Right. When you start talking boron, then it's only a tiny little bit that you're going to throw out. So again, you know, if it's a quart of something, you can probably throw that in. If you're talking gallons of fertilizer, probably not.
Okay. Second question he has, conventional corn. Same question. Can we do a post-herbicide? We've been using S-metolachlor, which would be like dual two. And he said, using that.
Well, dual magnum.
But
dual
anyway,
magnum, go ahead.
Yes. And he said, can I use dicamba in combination with that all in one pass?
Sure, you can. But again, you know, to think that you're going to go out and spray in one pass and kill all the weeds, if you had a super clean field to begin with, it's possible. I'm not saying it's not, but it's just it's less likely than anybody who's going to do a two-shot program. So in our operation, for example, I might use the dual pre-emerge, and then I might follow post-emerge with the dicamba plus a little atrazine or Roundup or on Roundup-resistant corn. We also will sometimes go a reduced rate of the group 15 or dual pre-emerge and then come with a little more group 15 or dual post-emerge. So anyway, lots of ways to do it. And I guess what we're most interested in, and so when we get questions here in this country and in Canada, we always ask people, all right, what's your number one weed problem? So that's what I really want to know. And then we start talking about, all right, what's the best choice for that and the appropriate rate? Because if you've got some easy weed, there's only a little bit of it, maybe you can get by with a lesser product, cheaper product, lower rate, something like that. It all comes back at the end of the day to dollars and cents as well.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Thanks for checking us out from a long ways east of us. Got one from Ross here. Now, Ross is just a little bit east of us. He's in the state of Iowa. He said, I'm looking to do fall strips for 30-inch row soybeans for the first time with our Soil Warrior machine. Do I want to leave the row cleaners up and mix residue into the strip to help with winter erosion? Are there any other tips that you would have for me running this fall? And finally, does a micronutrient blend at low rates mix well with larger amounts of P and K?
No and no are my answers. So do I want to blend residue in? No. I would like that row as clean as possible. Believe me, there's going to be residue that blows over the top of it over the course of the winter anyway. But yeah, I'd like to have it as clean as I can. That's just me. So you can certainly do it the other way if you want to, but I would like it clean. It's going to warm up, dry out faster. And that's what you want. And then in terms of blending a micronutrient in with the major nutrients, probably not, but talk to your supplier on that. What you're looking for is the bulk density. You got to have similar bulk densities. What you don't want to happen is for things to settle out in your tank and all of a sudden all your micros are at the start of the field or the end of the field. Now you have a real problem. The other way to solve that is have a multi-compartment hopper that's delivering the micronutrients out there. That's what we do on our farm, and then it works great.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. I get this one from Hilton. Hilton is in Zimbabwe. And he said, I really appreciate the information that you're putting out. It's quite informative. I've learned a lot, but I'm a novice still in farming. I'm wondering, I've got conventional maize or corn, and I've also got conventional soybeans. I have grass and broadleaf weeds, including the amaranthus species. Wondering what your chemical program would be for those particular crops.
Okay, when we start talking foreign countries, honestly, I don't know what's labeled in Zimbabwe, nor do I know Bulgaria or, you know, some of these other countries. So I can tell you what we would do here. If you want to give us a list of things that would be approved in your country, then we can get back to you on how effective are those at the weeds on the weeds you're after. So when we start talking soybeans, and I have amaranthus is pigweed and grass. If I have grass and pigweed, I'm going with the three pre's. I'm using a yellow. That'd be trifluralin or prowl. That's pendimethalin. I would use metribuzin, and I would also use one of the PPOs, either Valor or Authority here in this country. Then early post-emerge, I'm going to follow with probably a PPO like Cadet or Flexstar, that'd be fomesifen, along with maybe a group 15 like metolachlor, for example. I would say on corn, the best thing, I'm trying to think of the very best thing, I'd probably start out with a group 15, full rate of a group 15. So in this country, we talk about Dual, Zidua, Surpass, Harness, Outlook, one of those kind of products, group 15 pre at a full rate. Then post-emerge to further control the pigweed species, because for the most part you have the grass under control and you said it's conventional corn. I'm probably going to come with a dicamba or maybe one of the HPPDs. So mesotrione is really good. And if you can use a little bit of atrazine, not much, a little bit, then that will help as well.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Thanks for checking us out as well. Get this from Matt in central Pennsylvania. He said, couple things. First, an observation. In my area, low hay yields this year caused more corn to be chopped for silage, corn that normally would have made it into the commodity market due to below average rainfall got chopped. For us, we only got half the yield for our first cutting hay, and second cutting was almost non-existent. Interesting. That's good market intel, Matt. Thanks for sharing that. He said, I'm getting ready now to plant winter wheat. I have moldboard plowed. I planned a disc and harrow before planting. Should I consider putting a herbicide on after all that ground disturbance this fall? What about next spring?
Usually it's so uneven, it gets pretty tough. So if it was after the disking, I might do it. After moldboard plowing, I probably will not. Now, if you're doing all the till, oh, wait, did you say winter wheat?
Winter wheat.
Oh, so then I'm wrong. Okay, yeah. So it is going to be smooth then. So he is doing the disking harrowing this fall. So would I do something? All depends on what I have for weeds. Prepare is best for grass. That'd be my choice there. Or I'd go sharpen for broadleaves. Sharpen's probably $8 to $10 an acre. Prepare is $3 to $4.
Thanks for the question, Matt. Thanks for the market intel as well. Thanks to you for listening today. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.